When you want to see the world, but you're stuck in the 9-to-5 grind, what do you do? Live vicariously through others, of course. Hear all about other travelers' experiences, lessons learned, and must-see attractions of countries across the globe. Welcome to the Travel Lust Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Travel Lust podcast. My name is Chloe and I'm so glad you've decided to join me. Before we jump into this episode, which is all about living in Bali and Mexico, I just wanted to say a big thank you to anyone and everyone who has been supporting the podcast, either by listening, reading content on the podcast website, or following me on social media. It means a lot, and if you want to join me online, there are some links in the description. And of course, if you want to help the podcast grow, the best way is by word of mouth. So if you have someone in your life that loves to travel, why not send them a link? And now let's jump into episode 16 of the Travel Lust podcast, starring my friend Claudia. Hi, Claudia, and welcome to the Travel Lust podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
So good. So excited to be chatting with you because I know that you've done a lot of really interesting travel.
Yes, I have, I guess.
Yeah, so just to start off with, do you want to explain a little bit about who you are and what type of work you do?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Claudia. I'm in my early 20s and I'm currently living back in Australia now. I've been back in Australia for almost a year, settled down. What I do for work, I have an online business. So essentially I do network marketing and started growing that really from the age of 18, which really allowed me to one, travel along the way, but two, really gave me motivation, inspiration to get out of the 9-to-5 and really just move into having flexibility and running my own life so that I could have more freedom and choice. And so for me, that's what I still do. And along the way, I've picked up a couple of other businesses and do a few other things. And I haven't worked for anyone for the past, you know, few years now, which has been absolutely amazing. It means that I've got control of my time. I still end up being taking on projects that I really love though. So I still love to work and but do things that totally align with me, which makes me feel really, really good. So I went traveling. My first travel was really when I was, it was in 2014. I just turned 18. That was where my travel really began. And then from there, I just had a really strong desire to see more countries, experience more cultures. And that's what really got me motivated in getting out of the 9-to-5 and really just developing my own thing so that I could travel and work along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty amazing. Was that something that you always knew that you wanted to do? Like you knew you wanted to be your own boss?
No. It was funny. So no, not at all. I had it all planned out when I finished high school. I was going to go to uni for nursing and then I was going to finish uni, get a job and, you know, I guess start the more society's, you know, rules and I guess the way that life goes, you know, you get out of high school, go to uni, get a job and, you know, then start your life. And a lot of people find themselves that they're not traveling until they're a lot older because of that normality. So for me, you know, that's what I dreamed of doing. And it wasn't until I met this through my partner actually, but we met this random person in my hometown and he just opened up this opportunity of online work to us and it really appealed to us because I was actually unemployed at that time. So I was like, yes, money, I'll do whatever. But then after that, you know, really understanding what it could hold for my future, I really actually looked into it further and was like, wow, like this is a really good opportunity that I can't really pass up and I need to take advantage of. So that's how really that all started. But there's no way that I would ever say, like, when I was younger, this is exactly what I wanted to do. So I think that's a really cool thing about life is that you always move through different journeys and processes and new doors open. And, you know, life is not linear. It's like it's everywhere and anywhere. But, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, it just ends up working so great and better than what we ever expected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe you have lived in Mexico and Bali, is that correct?
Yes, yes, Mexico was the best, as well as Bali. They're two of my favorite places. Mexico because of the food, just everything. When me and my partner decided to leave our jobs a few years ago and go traveling full time, we wanted to experience something different, but we also said to each other that we wanted to stay in a place more than like a week or a couple of weeks, because we really wanted to experience that culture and what it's like to live in a different country. We always wanted to experience that, but couldn't really commit to, I guess, moving somewhere like 100% and settling down in another country. And we didn't want to do that until we really found a country that we liked. Funnily enough, we came back to Australia, but we didn't want to do that until we'd experienced it a little bit more. So Bali we had been before, so that's where we started, and we lived there for like a total of I think 5 months over two split periods, and it's just, oh, I love Bali. I think Bali really gets some crap sometimes for all the, you know, stereotypes about it, but if you go out of the tourist area, it's one of the most beautiful, beautiful places in the world, and the culture there is absolutely beautiful. The people are amazing, and I love living there. If I couldn't live in Australia, I would live in Bali for sure, 100%. And then Mexico was amazing as well. Once again, the culture, it was really hard because in Indonesia and in Bali, they actually speak a lot of English. In Mexico, they did not speak much English at all. So you could feel the culture, and I love, you know, Spanish as a language. I don't know much, but I love hearing it. So it was really cool to live there as well. I think we were there for nearly, nearly 3 months, 2.5 months, 2¾ months. And we moved around quite a bit as well until we found somewhere that we liked. And then in that time, we just kind of made our language barrier work. But the vibe over there is amazing. It's completely the opposite, I guess, to Bali. Bali's really relaxed. Mexico, it's very uplifting. You know, the music, all the food, the people. It's not party. I wouldn't classify it as party, but just very uplifting and just, you know, yeah, uplifting, I would say, is the only really word that I could describe it as.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds amazing. And what was that process like when you first decided to move overseas? Like, what was the steps? Like, how did you even go about planning that?
It was a 2-week turnaround. So it was like we made the decision that the next day we quit our jobs, we handed in our resignation. Like, it was no, there was no process. Like, we made, I think it was a weekend. It was, just after our birthdays. I don't know, maybe it was like, what are we doing with our life kind of thing. But we were talking on a weekend and we were like, we just want to go traveling so bad, and we're just like, let's do it. So that afternoon I called, because we have a dog, and we've had our dog, my partner and I have been together for 6 years, and we've had her for pretty much all of that. So we're like, what are we going to do with our dog Emmy? So I called my mum and said, we're going overseas, we're doing a one-way ticket, we're going to go live in some places overseas for a while, can you look after Emmy while we're gone? And she thought I was legitimately joking. Like, she's laughing, she's like, yeah, that's fine, you know, I always like look after Emmy if you need to. And then yeah, I called her a couple of days later and said, we've put our resignation, so we'll be coming up, we'll be driving like up on this date to you, because at that time I was living in a different state to where my family was. And and she still thought I was joking, and everyone thought we were joking, and we started selling everything. So we sold all our furniture, went through our clothes, gave everything away, kept the things that we needed, and also put a few things in storage when we eventually got to my mum's house. But we got rid of everything pretty much in like a week. And then the rest that we couldn't sell or give to people, we just threw out. And yeah, so it was still like 3 days until we were leaving to drive up to my mum's house, which was about a 15-hour drive. I was living in Victoria and she's in New South Wales, and she still didn't believe it. She's like, you guys are freaking crazy. And we're like, everyone's telling us this, but we just need to do it. And so it happened really quickly. I think also our lease on our rental was coming up as well, and that was a massive thing. We were like, we don't want to renew a lease anywhere. We just didn't feel like whatever we felt at that moment, we just wanted to be overseas. And so we just kind of followed that intuition and just let what we felt really guide us. And I think that was, we just actioned it so fast that before we knew it, we were on our first flight to Bali. And we're like, what are we even doing? Like, I think once we got to Bali, really the first couple of weeks felt like a holiday. And then we're like, oh my gosh, like we don't have a ticket booked back. And it kind of started sinking in then. And we're like, wow, we're like, our dog's with, you know, my mom. And like, it was all starting to sink in. And for a while, like, I really struggled because, you know, you don't have your friends, you don't have your family close by. And that was really hard for me. So at the beginning, I actually struggled, I guess, building a new routine and, you know, the way that I lived. That was something that you had to get used to. So being more sociable in more social outdoor settings, because, you know, you needed to meet people and develop friendships. And I'm so glad that I was able to do that, because I did feel really lonely at the beginning, you know, not having friends and family around, and just Shane, my partner, it was just me and him, and we're like, oh, we need friends. I need my girlfriends, you need your boyfriends, like, not boyfriends, but you know what I mean. And you know, we just really craved that. So I guess that was the next thing when we got there, was really just really putting our feet down and grounding ourselves in that area and space, and just getting back to, I guess, living life, but just in a different surroundings.
Yeah, totally. And what type of accommodation were you staying in? Did you book like a long-term Airbnb, or what type of things did you do?
Yeah, so we really, what we did when we first got to Bali, we actually did a lot of hopping around. So we stayed in like Seminyak, Ubud, and then we were just staying in a mixture of Airbnb. I think for the first week, we actually stayed in a hotel that we'd stayed in before, because we've been to Bali previous, because we just knew that it was good and we just wanted to kind of get there and like have a look around. So then we went out to Ubud. We stayed in a couple of houses, but we found that we liked being closer to the beach. So then we came back into Seminyak, stayed there for a little bit. I think that was an Airbnb. And then Canggu, that was in a like a stay house. And then we eventually got our own villa in Umalas, and that was through like a private guy. He actually was Australian, so he owned them, and we ended up getting like a long-term lease with him in the end, and stayed there. So it was a bit more expensive than, you know, I think it ended up being like $300 to $400 a week. But, you know, it had everything. We had our own big space, pool. We had, like, people that were coming in clean for us and do laundry and all that stuff. So it was really easy going as well. So it wasn't, I guess we didn't go the cheap way. We went the more luxury way, but we enjoyed that a lot more than, you know, the other places we stayed in. But for people that are looking for, you know, a smaller budget of maybe $100 a week or something, there's so many beautiful places that you can still have a budget. Like, Bali is incredibly, you know, it can be either cheap or expensive. It's whatever you want it to be, really. So yeah, same as, I guess, Mexico is more Airbnbs because of that language barrier. We couldn't really network enough to find the locals that did own homes to kind of like get a deal like we did in Bali. So that was more just Airbnb so that we could translate everything. So that it still ended up pretty, I guess, relatively cheap, but if you do speak, you know, the country's language, then it's definitely a lot easier to network, find locals, and really do, you know, really get, you know, a really good price in regards to long-term accommodation.
And I guess we're pretty lucky coming from Australia that we have pretty strong passports, but did you ever have any trouble ending up at customs and not having a return ticket booked? Were they like, are you trying to illegally immigrate?
We actually, I don't think so. Look, in Bali, we already knew that I'm just thinking of all the other countries that we've been to. Actually, it might have been Mexico. I think we did put, they did ask when we were leaving, and we just faked a date I hope they don't hear this. It wasn't illegal or anything. I think it was Mexico. I don't know. I remember it one country. We did go to Russia, though, at the beginning of this year, and that was incredibly tough. Like, that was after, you know, about 8 months we got back to Australia, we decided to go to Russia with a couple of friends. And that was one of the toughest. Like, you have to apply for a visa and you have to get approved and all of this. Like, pretty much every country that I've been before, you know, you just get a plane ticket, fill out some forms if you have to, and that's about it. But Russia was very, very hard. I would say that's been the hardest country to get into in regards to processes so far. The States as well. The States was very, you know, you had to do a, what are they called, an ESTA before you went to the States. So you had to make sure that that was all approved before you got there, which, I mean, as you said, being Australian, we're pretty lucky. You know, I don't think there's a place in the world that we can really go and, you know, get rejected from unless we've had criminal background or something like that. But in regards to processes, I think Russia would have to be the hardest. In Mexico, I forget, but in Mexico, we didn't really have to do anything. In Bali, after you've stayed there for a month, you just do it in country. You have to go to customs and do an extension on your visa. And then after that 2 months, you have to leave the country. So that's what we would do in regards to staying there long term.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's very interesting about Russia as well, you would think, just because of the area that it's in, you know, so close to Europe or part of Europe, I guess, that it would be pretty smooth sailing. But yeah, definitely interesting. There's not many countries where Australians have to apply for a visa to just enter the country.
No. So yeah, that surprised us a bit. And of course, Shane and I, we booked the tickets like a week before. So then we had to express everything and we're like, oh my gosh, what are these that get declined? We've already booked accommodation. Like, we probably did it the wrong way. So if anyone does want to go to Russia, just make, you know, try and get your visas done before you do book anything. Mm-hmm. Because that really, we were a bit anxious about that. We had to rush it, which cost us more. And so I think being prepared when you go to countries, like, you know, we always did our research before we went anywhere. We transferred to Mexico through the States, we did our research because we knew that the States were a little bit, their security was higher. So my tip would be, before you go anywhere, like, most countries are pretty good, but just check what you have to do, because the last thing we wanted to ever happen was get somewhere and be stuck and then, you know, miss flights or, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what we would always do, is just look up. You can find, I don't always go off the first, how I Google is I usually pick like the top three or top five and then make sure that all the information is correct between those resources. Mm-hmm. But also, if you go on a lot of government websites, you can find, you know, what you need to do from whatever country passport you hold, you know, if there are any restrictions or what type of processes you do need to do in relation to visas. So that would be my major tip for anyone that's traveling, because that would have saved us a lot. You know, there's so much that you don't know about countries and visas, and that massively saved us a headache at the end.
Yeah, definitely. I think for Australians, at least, the Smart Traveller website is such a blessing. I get so much information just from that one website.
Yes, me too. Yeah, that was so helpful. And not even when it comes to visas, like, it's just got so much, you know, good information about, like, insurance and security and how to keep safe and where to go if you're in trouble. And so, yeah, if you're Australian, I would definitely recommend checking that out if you are going to a place you haven't been before or you're a first-time traveller, because that was amazing. I think it was when we were in Mexico, we had to check something and we got information from there. And, you know, it's such an easy website to go through. So for sure, it's a massive help.
Definitely. And doing much longer term travel and staying for weeks or months in the one place, did you find any unique challenges to that that maybe you wouldn't have come across if you were just staying for a couple of weeks in each place?
I think, you know what, it was actually really, really beautiful staying in each place for a longer period of time, because then I feel like you really do get to see the culture for what it is. You know, when you're like in a place for only a couple of weeks, you're usually hopping around or, you know, you try and cram so much in. When you're in a place for a longer period of time, you start to slip into, you know, the habits that you might do, you know, in Australia when you're living at your home. And that was what was really cool. I don't really remember there being any challenges other than, I guess, in Bali, we rode scooters, so that was all good. I think the challenge there was probably getting used to the traffic. I did have a few crashes and a few stacks, but we're all good. So just being really aware with also, I guess, when you're staying longer term, the rules and rules that they have in their country, because it is, you know, with the police, it can be a lot different to us. Most countries are fine, are a lot easier going than Australia especially. But just being aware of that, you know, making sure that you're abiding by, you know, you're respecting their culture and you're respecting their, you know, their space and their country, because that's the thing, the biggest thing I think when it comes to tourism, especially in Indonesia, is that people go there and I feel like they don't respect the country. And I think that's so important. Like for me, I always would look up about the culture or what religion or just how they like to, you know, in Mexico, if you don't finish a plate of food, that comes across as rude. So I would make sure that I would always order something that I would like, because, you know, then to them, that's a really strong sign of respect. And just little things like that. So I think for me, you know, when you stay long term, you start to kind of slip into not sticking out as a tourist so much and becoming part of, you know, that country. I think that was the coolest thing. And, you know, with that, there are challenges, but you've just got to be aware of where you are and know that you're not in your own country, and that things can be a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. And so you obviously really love Bali and Indonesia. For people that have never been there, what would be your top recommendations for things to do, things to see, food to try?
Well, number one, do not go to Kuta. Do not go to Kuta. I think that's what really ruins it. It's around that area, the real heavy tourism. I don't like Kuta at all. I think it's just filled with so much tourism that's what ruins it. Top recommendations, there's so many. I think it's just to explore different areas. Like the beach is absolutely gorgeous. If you're confident on a scooter, I would recommend getting a scooter, because it's such a good way of transport. It is a little bit hectic at the beginning, but it is fun, but also allows you to go places where, you know, cars and that really can't go. In relation to food, I would definitely say, I'm a vegetarian, so for me, I eat, I guess, differently. Most people aren't vegetarian, but for me, definitely like the traditional, like you've got nasi goreng. I ate a lot of tofu and tempeh over there, which is amazing. The great thing about the area I was staying is that there's also a lot of Western food choices, but, you know, you can get a really brilliant, you know, gorgeous meal for like $10, where in Australia I know it would cost us, you know, almost $30. So the price difference that you can get over there for a really awesome meal that is made so beautifully is really cheap as well. So I'm just trying, definitely I always try the traditional food. If you go to Ubud, there's the most incredible ice cream ever on this earth. It's called Tukey's, and it's a coconut ice cream shop, and it is literally the best coconut ice cream I've ever tasted in the world. So I would definitely recommend there. But I'd recommend getting away from like the hustle and bustle, you know, the really touristy places, and getting out to, you know, nature. Ubud is really beautiful for that, but just getting out into where you can see the real culture. So if you go a little bit north of like Canggu and Seminyak, you'll find that you will see people of how they live now. You know, that was, you can see that was what it used to be before a lot of tourism hit. Like there's ladies that don't work, you know, they're very traditional in their wear. You know, they won't wear tops, they'll just wear skirts, and that's, you know, those skirts will be made out of like a cotton or something, and they'll still carry cane baskets on their heads. Like that's how they still travel and carry goods from one place to another. So it can be very traditional if you go out a little bit further. Another thing, or probably lastly, is like the sunsets are absolutely incredible. And I think that's the greatest thing about moving to Perth, is that I get a similar sunset to Bali. But if, like, you have to watch a sunset every day, what a lot of people do is they grab a beer or a drink and they'll find themselves on the beach, because you can buy alcohol from a convenience store, which is really cool. Go and watch the sunset. I personally don't drink that much, but I would, you know, we'd always get snacks or, you know, some type of drink and just go watch the sunset. And yeah, that was really, really cool.
Yeah, fantastic. I know, I think a lot of people, when they think of Bali, think of like yoga retreats or like surfing retreats and things like that. Is that a type of holiday that you would recommend for people that are interested in those types of things?
Yeah, for sure. Ubud is a little bit out, about 40 minutes from Seminyak, or about an hour and a bit from the airport. But it is has the best like all natural food, lots of natural stores, a lot of yoga barn. Like Yoga Barn is the major yoga company there, and they're awesome. It's really different. If you're someone that's really, I guess, if you're into spiritual, you know, personal growth, personal, you know, development and work, and, you know, you're looking for something more relaxing, I would definitely recommend Ubud. Seminyak, Canggu is awesome for surfing. There are heaps of surf camps there, so I would recommend going there. But then you've also got Uluwatu as well, and then you've got, like, Uluwatu, Jimbaran. Not so good for surfing because you've got a lot of cliffs and a lot of rocks, but you know, beautiful seafood. Once again, I'm vegetarian, so I don't eat meat or fish, but I know that Jimbaran is a classic for seafood and food there as well. I think a lot of people go surfing there too. But you know, that's the greatest thing, that there's so many, like, you choose, you know, whatever your sport or hobby is, you know, you can find it in Bali so easily. So that's the really cool thing, is that there's heaps of dynamic. You know, you can be really chill, you know, meditation yoga, or you can, you know, go rock climbing or waterfall. What's it called when you go down the rapids?
Like water rafting?
Yeah, like they've got all the adventure stuff as well. So you can find anything you really want. That's what's really cool about it.
Yeah, fantastic. And in regards to Mexico, what would be your recommendations there?
So we started in Mexico City. Mexico City was beautiful. It's very architecturally, it's absolutely gorgeous. So we didn't stay there for that long. Stayed there for about a week and a half. Just wanted to check it out. And then we got a flight to Cancun, which is on its coastline is on the Caribbean Sea. And its water is amazing. I preferred that a lot more than Mexico City because I love the beach and I love being outdoors. So I'd recommend like Cancun, Playa del Carmen, Tulum, beautiful, beautiful beaches, you know, very, very chill. And then also what you can find, there are a lot of touristy things to do. There's a lot of parks that you can go and do adventure stuff in. But what is really cool is I forget the names. So they're like essentially little water holes. I forget what the Mexican term is. Just trying to think of it. I've lost it. But they're little water holes. And you can find them pretty much everywhere along, you know, from Cancun all the way down. And they are so beautiful. The water's so clear. You can go, like, you can cliff jump into them and, you know, they're so deep and you can go diving. I'd really recommend checking them out. But mostly for the food is, you have to eat like tacos and traditional food. It's so different to the Western, you know, the Western takeoff of Mexican food. So number one thing for me was eating, like 24/7. I was like, yeah, I was always eating. And it was, that's, you know, finding more Mexican places. In the tourist spots, there's a lot of Western, but there's also a lot of good Mexican places that you can find. But the street carts, once again, I, as a vegetarian, I do have a lot of restrictions, like when it comes to street food, but my partner would always, you can always find a cart with a taco, you know, that you can get tacos for like 20 cents or 50 cents a taco Australian. And the street, he said that the street carts were the best, like the best traditional Mexican, you know, real Mexican flavor, were the best over, say, restaurants or, you know, takeout kind of things.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh my gosh, I'm starting to get hungry just like thinking about the food.
I'm like, now I want tacos.
So I know that you were traveling with your partner in both of these trips, but did you find any times where you felt unsafe or anything like that? Would you have any safety tips for both of those countries?
Yeah, look, in Mexico City, there was one night that we ended up, I think we went and watched a movie or something. We ended up walking back to our hotel around midnight. And that was the only time I felt unsafe in Mexico. I found that even in Bali, I would go a lot of places myself. And my mum would always be like, don't ever do that. Like, it's so naughty. But I just felt so comfortable. I felt extremely safe. And that's why, like, I would go for walks down to the coffee shop, or, you know, I would scoot around at night in Bali. And I know a lot of people say don't do that, but I did, because, like, intuition-wise, I felt comfortable and I felt safe. So I think it really just comes back to trusting your own gut. Like, don't go in places that you don't feel like are good and don't feel that are right. I think at night, I'm a really early bed person, so I was usually home, or if I wasn't with my partner, I wouldn't be going out at like midnight or, you know, 10 p.m. at night kind of thing by myself. And that would just be because, you know, usually I'd be going out with my partner. So that would be the only thing, is just really trust your gut. I know it's hard to say that, but, you know, the only way that each of us have our own limits on where we feel safe. You know, what I feel safe may not be what you feel like is safe. So I think it does come down to the individual on where your limits are. At first, when I was in both the places, I felt uncomfortable. And it was just really until I felt at a comfortable place, I didn't have to take, you know, Shane everywhere, or I didn't have to, or I could go to this place alone. That's when I opened up, I did feel safe. But for the first while, I wouldn't go anywhere without Shane. So you've just got to become, yeah, really self-aware and do whatever you feel is good and trust your gut.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's really important. I feel like people underestimate, like, just how intuitive you can be. You know, I think it's like the most important thing when you're traveling is just to, like, know yourself and know what you feel comfortable with.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I haven't traveled alone yet. That's something that I wanted to do either next year or this year or next year. But I did. So I always felt that if anything did happen, you know, I did have my partner there that I could go back to. So I haven't traveled completely by myself yet. And I think that's going to be a lot different, because then you really do have, like, no one. You only really do have yourself. And then, you know, you've got to find that kind of the people that you trust, that if anything does go wrong, like, you can help. So I was lucky that I always had someone that I could come back to, or somewhere I could come back to. I think that's a really important thing when you're living somewhere, is finding friends, because then you've got that group, and then you've got that safety net as well. But, yeah, it comes back to totally you. Just trust 100% what you feel, because most of the time it's right.
It's so true. Okay, Claudia, did you have anything else that you did want to say about either Bali or Mexico?
No. They're my, like, they're definitely my favorite out of the things that were the places I've been. They're two of my top favorites, and I would recommend them in a heartbeat. So, yeah.
So go there.
Just prepare yourself. But I think the biggest thing is, like, if you want to go somewhere, like, just make it happen. You know, I know it's not easy to save. I think the other thing, one more thing, is that people think that traveling is really expensive, and it doesn't have to be if you don't want it to be. A lot of people I know that travel and work, you know, they spent a lot. I've spent quite a bit traveling, but I would say that you can do it on a budget, and it's so easy to do on a budget. So don't ever think that traveling is out of your limits because of money, because you can always find a way and make it work.
Absolutely. That is definitely true. Okay. Was there any social media or websites that you wanted to promote where people can find you?
You can, yeah, I have Insta. I, like, Instagram's the only one I really use these days on regards to social media, so they can definitely check me out there. I don't really post much of my traveling, as I've kind of stopped. I usually just post, like, things when I'm craving a taco, or, you know, missing, you know, the cultures that I was living in. So definitely, yeah, follow me. My Instagram is just Claudia Monswear. So, yeah. Go check me out, and yeah, see my future travels.
Fantastic. Okay, Claudia, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. It's always lovely to talk to you. You're always so bright and bubbly, and you're just Yeah, so great.
Awesome. Thanks, Chloe, and thank you so much for having me. It was super fun, and yeah, I'm so excited for people to hear it. But thank you so much for also doing this, because it's a real avenue for people to come on and get some travel advice and tips and what to do and what not to do. So thank you for even creating this.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I've kind of come full circle, because you were one of the first people that I told that I wanted to do this podcast. So it's great to have you on the podcast now.
I know. I was like, go do it. And you're like, okay. Yeah. I love people that live up to their word. You can't always, you can talk the talk, but you gotta, when you walk the talk, that's, you know, that's what matters.
Absolutely. Okay, well, this has been another episode of the Travel Lust podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.